I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
With over 25 years of expertise, DAF Giving 360's donor advised funds can help you get a tax deduction and potentially grow your charitable dollars tax-free while you recommend when and where to give. Learn more at DAFGiving360.org.
Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's built around your body. The Natural Cycles app pinpoints your fertile days by tracking shifts in your temperature so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. It's easy to use. Simply take your temperature in the morning with our free Bluetooth thermometer included with our annual plan, or sync with your Oura Ring or Apple Watch. The app analyzes your data and tells you daily whether it's a fertile or non-fertile day. Natural Cycles is 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. But beyond effective birth control, the app helps you understand your body and cycle better than ever. And unlike some period tracking apps, Natural Cycles provides an advanced data protection program to keep your information private and secure. Ready to go hormone-free? Sign up for the Natural Cycles annual plan and get a free Bluetooth thermometer, plus 15% off your subscription with the code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Now, Fred, you know you can't say something like that, like, right before the show starts, and then Sue and I are going to be in suspense. Like, seconds ago, he says, I have to tell you about my latest... Oh, no! And then he stopped himself, Sue.
Yeah.
You can't do that. If this is airworthy material...
It's a car story.
Okay, well, we're going to have to hear it right now, because I've made the executive decision that we're hearing it right now. It's too much suspense. It's too much suspense for Joyce, who might be listening, and anyone else who might be listening this afternoon.
What happened, Fred?
So this morning, my wife took her car into the dealer to get some recall notices done on it.
Okay.
And so they got it up to speed, and they called her and said, your car's ready to be picked up. Oh, by the way, we crashed it. We bumped into it.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh, seriously.
She's on her way over there now to, they said, we think we can buff it out. But you might want to come look.
Famous last words. Yeah.
What did they crash it into?
I don't know.
Okay.
Oh,
so
my gosh.
That's breaking news.
Oh, I would raise hell.
Bottomer Dilch household.
Yeah, I would absolutely raise hell and see what you can do about that. Because
wow.
That's not
that's
too
so,
good.
I feel bad for
that's
everybody
the second
involved.
Time that's happened to me.
At a dealership?
At a different dealership, yeah.
You're kidding me.
Yeah.
Fred.
The first, like, you remember when Saturns first came out and they had all these sort of parties for people when they buy them? They had this big dealership party.
Oh,
and we all showed up and brought our cars.
Oh, wow.
And we had food. And while we were eating and drinking the Kool-Aid, they would run our cars through the car wash connected to the dealership. And they just scratched up the entire side of the car. When
Fred.
They did that. But that was years ago.
Okay, yeah. Just curious. What did they do? Did they?
They said, we can buff it out or we can give you a new one. And I said, how about a new one?
Wait, give you
and
a new what? Sure. Give you a whole new car?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Buff it out. Are you kidding me?
That was years ago, though.
But in this case, I wouldn't.
Yeah,
you know,
I don't know what this one is.
Hashtag buff it out.
What
I'd say, no, I'm not going for that deal.
Buy a car, too.
Man,
it didn't work
so
for
that's
Saturn.
It. Fred's back to the news. Back
Fred's
to the
got a lot
stuff.
Of stuff going on. He had his wife had the flat tire and crashed yesterday. Yeah. I think basically all of this is focused and oriented around Marie, though, right?
That's right.
You just have to come in for the rescue.
Although, I see, I never told you the other part.
Oh,
I actually had my windshield repaired, replaced at work a couple days ago.
Love it.
They came downtown and gave me a whole new windshield.
That's great.
If my daughter was here right now, she would go, Safe Flight Replay.
Safe Flight Repair.
Okay, I got it wrong, but I'm telling you, the way that the marketing hits these young kids, I'm completely convinced, and I've said this before, with the, you know, whether it's the Progressive commercials or some of the insurance commercials, those aren't for those of us who have had insurance for decades and were with State Farm or Allstate or whatever. Those are for kids So when they get 18 or 21 or whenever they're going to handle their own insurance, it's the cool company that they're going with. I'm completely convinced of that.
Listen, if you have a good jingle and it gets in people's heads, you're ahead of the game.
You are. You are. And if you're Cracker Barrel, you're behind the game, I guess,
no,
at this point.
True.
I want to see. I do want to see the numbers from Cracker Barrel and, you know, what happens with the, you know, the crowd. Do people avoid this? Now, here's something interesting. And we did this. When was Asra on yesterday, Fred? Was she on in the first hour?
Yes.
Okay. Well, so if you were listening to us in the first hour, you may have noticed that Asra Nomani, who's a regular guest on the show, had written this piece. It was fantastic. And this was before they backed off on the rebrand. But one of the things, and the reason I bring this up is because there's a piece that's in the Wall Street Journal today that is not unlike this total narrative that she seized on. So what happened was, and I noticed this right away, were you in here when we were talking about this? As soon as this all happened with Cracker Barrel last week, the official account for Steak and Shake.
Yeah, that was
very aggressive. Like, really, really aggressive. I'm like, what in the world is going on with Steak and Shake making a big deal? And they didn't stop. You know, they kept going and they went through the rebrand of the rebrand. Can we just call it that when they backed up? So this is the Wall Street Journal this morning along those lines. For activist investor Sardar Biglari, Cracker Barrel's about face on the logo change isn't enough. Biglari, the chief executive of Steak and Shake and owner of an investment firm that is a shareholder in Cracker Barrel, has spent years swiping at the country-themed restaurant chain, waging unsuccessful proxy fights over more than a decade. The removal of the, quote, old-timer, the man on the restaurant's logo since 1977, proved an irresistible opening to agitate against the Tennessee chain. And that, in fact, he did. He really did. He, they give him credit here for fueling a lot of the social media outrage against Cracker Barrel and Julie Fels Masino, who is the CEO, at least for now. So I don't know. The guy who operates Steak and Shake is quoted, Dan Edwards, says, look, it pays to be authentic. And that's one of the things that they were trying to focus on. Biglari is not doing any interviews. I think he's done enough online, which was fascinating. All right. Well, I'm trying to avoid some of the obvious here today because we have updates on this shooting from Minnesota. We also have a situation where, like, the New York Times has a headline about her and she doing the shooting. Jesse Waters did a great monologue last night on, it's really a he. We know that this was, I mean, I don't even think there's a debate about this anymore. This is definitely a trans shooter. Here's something that's interesting, though, and I don't know what to make of this. I don't know what to make of a lot of these things that happen with these mass shootings. Let's see if I pulled this up because I took a screen capture of this. Apparently, did you see this, by the way, and I don't know if they talked about this a lot. You know, some of the manifesto was in a different language. Did you notice that?
No.
Yeah, it was, when I first saw this manifesto yesterday, I don't know if it was in Russian or another Eastern European language, but it wasn't all in English. So what? There's one website out there that says the decoded manifesto of the Minneapolis school shooter reveals that he was, quote, tired of being trans and wished that he never brainwashed himself. That's pretty on target there.
Whoa.
I can't cut my hair now as it would be embarrassing defeat. I will probably chop it on the day of the attack. And I don't know if that happened at all. But here's the update. The chief of Minneapolis police just had a news conference about an hour ago with the very latest on all this.
What we have seen so far is this is an individual who, unfortunately, like so many other mass shooters that we have seen in this country too often and around the world, had some deranged fascination with previous mass shootings and very disturbing writings that demonstrate hatred towards many different individuals and different groups of people. And he fantasized about the plans of other mass shooters. Unfortunately, again, this has become all too common in our society.
Yeah, you know, when I was kind of describing this whole thing yesterday with the video that came out, which is really, really creepy. I know that YouTube pulled it down, but it's still out there and people have shared it on Twitter. But he's just laughing in a very sinister way, speaking underneath his breath a little bit and showing off the weaponry that he was going to use in the attack. And it had all kinds of names that were either on the, you know, the shaft of the gun, the the cartridges, all kinds of ways. And some of those names on there, it was random. There was anti-Jewish stuff on there. There was anti-Trump stuff. There was anti-everything. I mean, he hated, and this is one of the things they get into here in this news conference, it's not just like he was focused on one group. He pretty much hated everyone. But there was, remember I said this yesterday, there was a name of someone who had done something similar in Madison, Wisconsin. Now, I'm particularly careful. I'm being careful today because I've said this for years, and I love the fact that it's catching on that we should not be using the name of this shooter.
We know ultimately the purpose of the shooter's actions was to obtain notoriety for the shooter themselves. That being said, I have only said the name of this shooter once, and I'm asking members of the media to stop saying the shooter's name. That was the whole purpose of why he did this heinous act, to obtain that notoriety for themselves.
Okay, but the one thing you can't do, if you're not going to say the shooter's name, you better damn well get the pronouns right, right, Jake Tapper?
A piece of the puzzle as to who the shooter was. The Minneapolis Star Tribune says, according to court records, because there's been some confusion about what the shooter's name was.
Yes.
Robin Westman's mother applied to change her child's name in 2019. It was, at one point, Robert Paul Westman.
Correct.
But since she identifies as a female and wants her name to reflect that identification, was underage, it's now Robin.
Okay, well, maybe it's not, because I'm not going to call him by either name. A couple of things that came out today is that the church doors, this mass began, and the church doors were locked from the inside because they were supposed to be. Every time, Fred, I guess they right. started mass, they would lock the doors. The chief talked about that a little bit today. I mean, that I think, saved a lot of lives.
Chief, could you talk about, we're hearing some new details come out about the moments inside the church.
Yes.
About the doors being locked and how that yes. might have protected some of the kids. Could you talk to us about that?
So the question was about the doors being locked at the church. Annunciation Church had a practice that once mass began, they locked the doors of the church. This incident occurred shortly after the mass was beginning. So there's no question that the fact that the doors were locked likely saved additional lives. At the same time, we also know that the shooter intended to barricade and did barricade the doors on the same side of the church where the shooting occurred. So what's particularly heinous and cowardly about this is these children were slaughtered by a shooter who could not see them. He was standing outside of the building, firing through very narrow church windows on the level where they would line up with the pews.
Now, we did get confirmation that the shooter did attend this school at one point and had attended mass there. His mother worked at the school as well. There were questions about the guns that were, I think, purchased legally.
How was he able to obtain a weapon of that magnitude?
So the question was, due to previous social media posts, why was the individual able to obtain a weapon? We have nothing in the evidence that we have acquired so far that would indicate that he is a person, that he did not lawfully purchase these weapons. He did not have a criminal history. The only thing that we are aware of is a traffic ticket. He did not have any state-ordered commitments for mental health. So of everything that we have seen so far, it did not rise to the level where he would have been a person prohibited from purchasing a firearm.
Well, this dude was messed up, there's no doubt. When I read from some of the manifesto yesterday, look, and I'm not, don't misinterpret what I'm about to say here, because this was definitely full of hate, and he was full of hate. But then he ends his whole deal. Remember, I was talking about this with, you know, I love you, talking about his family and giving advice to his sister.
Yeah.
And, you know, he just said that he was tortured by some of this and he had to go out his own way. I think the question is, well, do you have to do it by killing, you know, children? And that's what they made clear today, that he wanted to see, this was part of his whole goal, he wanted to see children suffer. The question about Trump, was Trump a target?
Ash Patel put out some details today, including that there was a threat against President Trump.
That there is no question in this case that this shooter intended to terrorize the children, the school members of the school community, the parishioners were inside of that church. So whatever label we want to put on it, is almost regardless of the fact that it is very clear that this shooter had the intention to terrorize those innocent children.
That's awful. And then one more soundbite here from Joe Thompson. He is the assistant, I guess he's the acting DA, they say, in Minneapolis.
The shooter left behind hundreds of pages of writings. Writings that describe the shooter's plan, writings that describe the shooter's mental state, and more than anything, writings that describe the shooter's hate. Pure, indiscriminate hate. The shooter expressed hate towards almost every group imaginable. The shooter expressed hate towards black people. The shooter expressed hate towards Mexican people. The shooter expressed hate towards Christian people. The shooter expressed hate towards Jewish people. In short, the shooter appeared to hate all of us. The shooter's heart was full of hate.
Yeah, the shooter was messed up. Wow. Beyond messed up, really, really. And the whole thing, and again, I'm still shocked in a very positive way that more people weren't killed. And there are some people that are in still serious condition at the hospital. But, you know, that 10-year-old kid that we had the soundbite of yesterday,
yeah.
He talks about how, and they were talking about some of this today, that I think he was in fifth grade, right? They said,
yeah, he was
so
10.
I don't, is it fifth, sixth, seventh? Is that the middle school? Because there were, I thought maybe eighth graders were an eighth grader. My daughter has this now in fifth grade. She's got like a buddy from an earlier grade that they kind of pair them with. And apparently one of the eighth grade kids just like, climbed on top of these younger kids. Some of the older kids
right.
were on top of them, you know, instinctively trying to protect them, which I think is an amazing part of the story. Okay, John Levine's going to join us from the Washington Free Beacon, and he's got some things to say about the Minneapolis shooter and some other topics. John Lott, who is great on crime numbers. We already kind of thought about John because of D.C., and some of these other things happening in Chicago, but he's got some interesting numbers on the trans angle of this shooting, and that's coming up as well. Well, 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 we are approaching the weekend very quickly, and bonus round, it's a holiday weekend.
Woo!
We will have a best of show on Monday. That will be nice. I mean, good Lord, I need the time off, Sue. I've barely been off at all this summer, so I can't wait for the day off.
Yeah, yeah, that's probably
you know,
true.
There was some panic because I originally had last Thursday and Friday on the vacation day list because I was going to go out to Vegas. Now, I had canceled that trip earlier in the summer, but Trisha had texted me, goes, hey, do you still need those days? I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that to you. I've taken enough
Appreciate that.
Time off. Yeah, there you go. I'm committed to working here for a little while. We'll have Sue's news in the next hour, but tomorrow we have a roundtable. Jane will be here. Steve Butts, State Representative, GOP consultant David Barklage. Our sheriff is in the news again. Did you see that?
Oh, my gosh. Did he get indicted?
Well, he got indicted, but then he also, Andrew Bailey's office had to drop the nepotism charge because they actually did a DNA test, and he's not related to the dude. So he dropped that, but then, hey, good news. Oh, yeah, but he got indicted. It's weird, though. I'll get into it later.
Okay.
It's like a misdemeanor charge, so I don't know. Mm. I mean, the main goal here is getting this guy. He's a clown show, right? Getting him out of office.
Yes.
John Levine is back with us this afternoon. John is the reporter for the Washington Free Beacon. How are you, John? Welcome back to the show.
I'm great. Great to be back. This is my first time back as a Washington Free Beacon reporter.
Well, that may have confused me just a little bit because I saw you on Fox yesterday and I thought that the title might have been a little different. So there was a job change?
Yeah, you know, there's a new sheriff in town in D.C. and I just felt it was the right time to come down here and things happened. You know, things happen in life. And here I am now at the Washington Free Beacon and I love it and everyone's great. And what we did in New York City, we're going to do here.
Awesome.
And a lot of people are in big trouble.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on that. That sounds awesome. And I want to ask you about some of the things happening in D.C. You know, it was interesting, too. I saw this story, I think it was Sunday or Monday, about fire aid in the L.A. Times. And I know that that was one of the reasons you were talking about it on Fox. But let me get your reaction just to what happened in Minneapolis and the shooting and the reaction in Washington today. John, any thoughts on how this is all kind of unfolding in this second day of trying to figure out what the hell happened up there?
It's just a very terrible tragedy. Obviously, we still don't know everything or even most things, but what we do know is very disturbing. And this was a second incident of where a transgender identified shooter shot up a religious institution and unfortunately killed several people, in this case, children praying in the pews during mass during a church. I mean, it can't get more awful than that. And I don't know what the future holds, but hopefully we can sort of begin to precipitate some kind of conversation about, you know, the violent, you know, tendencies, because we're, you know, we're taking these kids who are saying that they're born in the wrong body, they have gender dysphoria, and we're just shoving them full of hormones. We're giving them all these very, very powerful drugs at young ages. And look, if you shove someone full of hormones, it creates aggression as a very common side effect. And you have already people who are kind of mentally unstable to begin with. And it's potentially a very toxic, lethal cocktail and very volatile. And I don't know. I hope we can sort of begin to have a conversation about what are we doing here?
Yeah, and we
How
should
did
have.
We get to this place?
Part of that conversation happened here and originated in St. Louis with Jamie Reed, who was the whistleblower, and that, you know, was something that brought down the so-called gender-affirming care clinic at Washington University and Children's Hospital. But what really jumps from that whole episode to me, because when she first wrote about this, and then, you know, I interviewed Jamie several times, the concern that she had was very specific to mental illness, telling the doctors and the people that were leading that clinic, hey, look, you are automatically just hopping people up on these puberty blockers and other drugs, and you're completely ignoring the fact that these are kids that are messed up, like severely mentally ill.
Right. Right. And you have a lot of kids who need, you know, counseling or maybe very different kinds of drugs, but certainly not, you know, these very high powered hormones or other things that they're getting. And it's you know, because I'm a reporter, I always see the market motive. I always see the profit motive. And you have, you know, a drug like Lupron, for example. This was for stage 4 prostate cancer. And now it's being used as a puberty blocker, which creates an enormous new market share for it. And I see too many people making too much money on the gender-affirming care industry for me not to be suspicious.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we haven't yet reckoned with the tragic consequences and side effects. I mean, you know, there's an ocean of people who they wake up one day and they're 30 years old and it's like, oh my God, what have I done with myself? I'm mutilated.
Yeah, but
why
you don't.
Someone stop me.
You don't read about that. You know, I pointed to this Washington Post story from a couple of weeks ago that talked about this family that owned a bookstore. I think it was in North Dakota, South Dakota, something like that. And they're being run out of their state because of a bathroom bill because of their trans child. So the Washington Post and the other legacy media, they love to prop up those stories. They never tell the other side of the story of the detransitioners and the people that feel like they were, nope, you know, abused and mutilated. That story never gets into the legacy media, only the other side.
No, they do not. And it's very, very sad because, you know, these are irreversible changes that people undertake to themselves. And, you know, if you have a kid that says, okay, well, I'm gay, that's whatever, because, you know, maybe you are, maybe you aren't. This doesn't really involve, you don't have to do anything. But if you say you're transgender, that puts you on a sort of roadmap, a treadmill, if you will, of services that, you know, from surgeries to hormones to various other things that can be life altering forever. There is no going back. So the bar for, like, are we going to go along with this has to be very, very high because the results are irreversible.
Yep. Chris Elston, Billboard Chris, has been very, very vocal about that, and it's a very, very important point. All right, I'm going to run out of time, and that's my fault, but you have to talk about this fire aid thing in L.A., because as I mentioned, I saw this in the L.A. Times. So $100 million is raised from this thing. I remember watching the concert, playing some of the highlights here on the show. But where did the money go, John? That's one of the questions right now, correct?
Well, I think a lot of your audience probably won't be surprised to know that the 160 California nonprofits that Fire Aid has given the money to have not always spent it in the most judicious way possible. And I'm, you know, it didn't take crazy amounts of sleuthing. All I did was go on the Fire Aid website and look up the individual organizations. So right off the bat, and they list them all there. So right off the bat, you have several that are openly racially exclusionary. They say if you're not black or Latino, you cannot apply for grants from our organization.
Right. You highlight something called the Green Line Housing Foundation, and it got $4.8 million from a pool dedicated to health and housing, and it notes right away no whites need apply, right?
Right. I mean, it doesn't frame it in the negative. It says only black and brown can apply. So, but the negative is obvious. Well, if only black and brown can apply, we know who's not allowed to apply. There was also the Black Freedom Fund. There was at least three different groups dedicated to servicing illegal aliens, which, again, like, these are people who are criminals, frankly, who are in our country. They broke the law, and they're receiving fire aid funds, and they should be, you know, getting an ice wagon instead. There was at least 10 different groups dedicated to mental health, which, God bless them, important, but not really not going to build your house back.
My favorite is the California Native Vote Project. Explain that.
The Native Vote. Yeah. Get out the vote for Native Americans. How many Native Americans are in the Palisades anyway, by the way?
I don't know. That was stolen land, though, I'm guessing, at one point.
Yeah, right. You didn't start with the land acknowledgement. Shame on you. And it's all, I mean, and I don't want to say it was all down the toilet. There were a lot of very legitimate charities on there that got money, and I'm like, okay, that makes sense. This makes sense. But there was a lot that didn't. And we all, look, California spends billions of dollars on the homeless nonprofit industrial complex. And you go there, and it's like we lost a war. There's tent cities everywhere. You're like, is this America? And, yeah. And where does the billion that we spend on this go? And it goes to salaries, it goes to overhead, and it goes to galas. Nonprofits love having big parties.
And by the way, I have to correct you, John, and I know that you will apologize profusely here, but it's the unhoused, okay? It's the unhoused.
The unhoused. I'm so sorry.
Step up your game now that you're at the Washington Free Beacon. Yes, exactly.
We both have to be better.
Great reporting. Congrats on the new gig. I really appreciate it. We'll have you back soon.
What does possibility mean to you?
That's a hard question.
Something that you can strive for.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
You're confident in yourself and you believe in yourself. Stuff that you could achieve.
I feel excited. Anything is possible when you're more confident.
Shoes are a huge part of that. They are the most important part of my style.
You can like express yourself
in the right shoes.
Anything is possible.
DSW, countless shoes at bragworthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
No matter why your clients give, their donations can do so much more. With a donor-advised fund from DAF Giving 360, they can donate cash, publicly traded securities, or other non-cash assets like real estate and even crypto, while recommending grants at any time. DAF Giving 360 can offer you over 25 years of expertise, bringing donors, financial advisors, and charities together to make a greater impact. Learn more at dafgiving360.org/advisors.
Why are more women than ever choosing Natural Cycles? The hormone-free, side-effect-free way to take control of your fertility. Natural Cycles is a birth control app that uses your temperature to find your fertile window. It is more than a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
Big moments or small moments, they all deserve great style. Our over 800 stylists are here to help you look and feel your best. Visit your local Marisa's to find fashion fit for you with a little help from us.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature, whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to or the succulents that adorn our homes. Nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today.
Yes.
All right,
yes,
take
anytime.
Care. We'll see you. Got Sue's News for a Thursday on a beautiful, beautiful afternoon in St. Louis. Should be beautiful tonight, by the way, at the Muni.
Woo-hoo!
For Diana Ross and John Baptiste. We'll have, as I mentioned, a Reardon roundtable tomorrow. Jane will be on the panel. State Rep. Steve Butts, who's a veteran, and David Barklage, GOP consultant. Frank Cusimano in the 4 o'clock hour, of course. All the regular stuff. Paul Hall with entertainment. Tim Summer talking music in the 5 p.m. hour tomorrow. John Lott is back with us. He's the president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. He's always great on the crime issue and guns in particular. John, how are you? Welcome back. Hope all is well.
Oh, thanks for having me on. It's great to talk to you again.
I want to talk about D.C. and Chicago and, unfortunately, like St. Louis, where we have bad crime as well. But you dug into the numbers here a little bit. In the aftermath of this shooting, now it's all about gun control again. But there's also this trans angle that the legacy media really wants to ignore. And I saw at least one graph that you had put out there that addressed the issue of how many trans shooters we've actually had in this country in more recent history. Didn't you come up with something right. along those lines that were kind of revealing?
Right. Well, I mean, if you kind of adjust for their share of the population, the surveys indicate that it's something about 0.75% of the population identifies as trans, and you compare them to their share of the mass public shooters, they're about seven times their share of mass public shooters is about seven times their share of the population. So that's concerning, you know, that it's so that they're so overrepresented. Now, look, to me, it's not super surprising, because one thing that you see with these mass public shooters over and over and over again is that you have people who are suicidal. You have people who want to end their life. We've always had people who wanted to end their lives. But at some point along the line, people realize that by going and killing lots of other people, they could go and get attention. So what you find for these mass murderers is that a couple things. One is they're suicidal to begin with, but two, they feel unappreciated. And so, you know, you have these trans individuals, you read their diaries and manifestos that they have, that they've left behind. You know, they're filled with things that society is trying to kill the trans people there and things like that. So I guess there's also the additional thing that's different than a lot of these mass murderers, and that they think that they're, you know, somehow being vindicated because they're fighting back for trans being killed. I'm not sure what trans
are.
They never are specific about which trans individuals are being killed. But in any case, but I have to say, the one thing that just kind of, it keeps striking me about these mass murders, and I know you and I have talked about it before, is how explicit they talk. Explicitly, they explain why they pick the targets they do. But you will look in vain through any of the media coverage on this to find even one story with the explanation that the killer gives. So if you read his manifesto, if I can just quote to you, he says, "I recently heard a rumor that James Holmes, the Aurora theater shooter, may have chosen venues that were, quote, gun-free zones, end quote. I would probably aim the same way. Holmes wanted to make sure his victims would be unarmed. That's why I and many others like school so much. At least for me, I am focused on them." Adam Lanza, who, by the way, did the Sandy Hook killing, is my reason. You know, and the thing is, what amazes me is the media goes and makes it clear that they've read his manifesto. CNN has a long discussion about his, quote, obsession with school shootings. The Washington Post describes the manifesto's, quote, reverence for other mass shooters. You have similar things in the Times and many other places, international outlets. And yet somehow none of them, not once, will go and mention that, well, you know, his obsession with school shootings was that what he had learned from them was that you had to pick places that where victims weren't able to go and defend themselves, that were gun-free zones. And that's the reason why he was focusing on schools. I don't know how much more explicit they can make it, but it's not just him. You know, you look at the Nashville school shooter, again, exactly the same thing. You look at the Buffalo supermarket attacker there. He talks about, you know, good areas where CC permits are outlawed may be good areas of attack. You know, it just and he picks that type of place. On our website, we have literally dozens of similar statements by these killers where, I mean, but yet you will not find one news story anyplace where they go and have quotes from these guys about why they picked them. Now, my guess is if they even had sometimes they say, okay, we had another mass murderer who picked a target where he knew his victims would be defenseless, that they were disarmed. You know, at some point, I think that'd have a big impact on the gun control debate. And the other thing is, isn't it newsworthy to know yes. why these guys keep on picking the targets that they do? What possibly? I mean, you're in the news business. I can't for the life of me figure out why the media refuses to talk at all, even mention once anybody, not Fox, not the New York Times, not the Washington Post, not ABC, NBC, CBS, NBC, none of these guys will mention this. And, I used to try to talk to news editors. I'd say, you know, when you have one of these attacks, why don't you mention that the attack occurred in a gun-free zone right. place? And they say, well, if you can get me the information within, like, the news cycle, you know, like within a couple hours after it occurring, then they would do it. And so I made a huge effort, and I got that information to them. And then they still wouldn't use it. And I'd ask them why, and they said, well, John, you have to understand, it would just be political if we were to include that in the story. I said, why is it any more political to say we've had yet another mass public shooting in a place where guns are banned than it is to go and talk about what type of gun, you know, you call it an assault weapon, or to go and have something else in there, like how you think the person obtained the gun. Facts, by the way, that frequently the initial news reports turn out to be wrong, okay? And yet they have no problem with that. I don't know why.
These are valid questions. Or less these are great questions. And, I think it's just because it's easier for them to go right to the gun control debate than it is to dig into any of the other stuff.
Well, why isn't this part of the gun control debate?
Yeah, I don't know.
Why isn't whether or not you have a gun-free zone? That seems like a gun control issue, isn't it?
It is. I'm with you. I don't, you know, and I don't know why that doesn't manifest itself more often. It's a great question. Let's John Lott is here. He's the president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. A lot of focus, obviously, the last couple of weeks on D.C. I was shocked yesterday. I had a soundbite from Muriel Bowser, the mayor of D.C., almost praising the National Guard for coming in, reducing the amount of carjackings. When it comes to the, you know, the crime in D.C. and the murder rate in particular, you say, look, the murder rate in D.C. is about 500% higher than the average state, John.
It's if you look at the 2024 data, the 2023 data was like 500%. For the 2024 data, it was 434% higher than the average state. You know, Democrats want to make D.C. a state. So, I mean, I can compare it to other cities. If you look at the 25 largest cities, most populous cities in the United States, of which D.C. is one of those, what you find is that it has the highest murder rate of any of the 25 largest cities. In fact, it's much higher. It's like 28% higher than the number two city. And if you want to compare it to states because they want to make it a state, it's 169% higher murder rate in 2024 than the highest state. It's like, and as we just said, it's 434% higher than the average state. So, you know, these are pretty incredible numbers. And that's even just accepting those numbers for where they are, because there's a lot of
manipulation
from the police,
no,
that they've been fudging the data that's there. And so, you know, it could even be much worse. But, you know, you look, we just had it 13 days in a row without a homicide in D.C. If you take the average daily rate of homicides in 2024 in D.C., the odds that you could get 13 days in a row is 1 in 800. You have one chance in 800 tries to get 13 days in a row. And, you know, that's pretty unlikely that you're going to have that. And they had one homicide on the 14th, but we've now had a couple days going back to zero homicides. So it just, you know, and it's not just that. As you were mentioning, the mayor was saying in the first 20 days that they've had this, they have carjackings are down 87%.
Way down from last year, right. And she even pointed out that most of those are, you know, conducted with a weapon, right? So that's an important aspect to that, too. So do you think that some of this, because obviously what Trump's doing in D.C. is legal, if he tries to do something like that in Chicago or elsewhere, do you think it flies?
Well, I mean, he can go and put in National Guard people, but their effectiveness and what they're able to do would be tremendously reduced. Look, there are lots of differences with D.C. One is governors can go and give National Guard troops essentially police powers. They can go and arrest people, but it requires the governor to do that. In D.C., the president is effectively the governor there. So he can go and give Trump can go and give the National Guard the power to go and arrest criminals that they see and pick them up for crimes. Pritzker is not going to allow him to do that in Illinois. Pritzker is not going to give his approval for that. And so there are real limits on what he's going to be able to do to try to help out. I hope what happens is people see, look, this isn't rocket science. We have more people on the street to go and arrest criminals, and crime plummets. So, you know, D.C., before all this, had 1,300 patrol officers for the district. But that means you're not going to have at most 400 or so on duty at any point in time. Because not everybody's around to be on duty. You have some people who are injured and some people who are on vacation and other things. Having 400 people do all sorts of different types of tasks for a district that has 720,000 people is asking a lot. And it's understandable why the police unions say that they've been stretched
absolutely
into the breaking
and
point.
On a different scale, it's happened here, you know, in St. Louis as well. Some of the numbers of how many patrol cars are actually out in our downtown area in certain districts between, you know, the early evening hours and the early morning is actually staggering how low it is. And the criminals are pretty aware of this. John Lott, always great to have you on. I appreciate the work on all this, and we'll get you back soon. You have a great holiday weekend. You know, yesterday I talked about those Oreos with Reese's, Sue.
Oh, yeah.
Several reports from listeners to say, and I don't know why it is, but Dierbergs being cited as where they not only have them, but they have them on display.
Huh.
So it was kind of my goal to get some of these before tomorrow, right? Can you remind me?
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to forget.
No,
you know that. Like, I have things on my calendar.
Could just text Jane right now and take care of it.
Why don't you do that? That would be easier. Say, Jane, go get some Oreo peanut butter cookies because we want to try them tomorrow. I think that would be good. I mentioned this a little bit earlier in the hour. So you have two stories about Alfred Montgomery in the news this afternoon. He's the sheriff of St. Louis, and he's been controversial, a very controversial figure. One of the charges from Andrew Bailey, the outgoing attorney general who's heading to, you know, D.C. to work with Cash Patel and Dan Bongino at the FBI, becoming co-deputy director, they had said that one of the issues was nepotism because they claimed there was a court filing that had relied on what they refer to as a high-ranking deputy in the sheriff's office, claiming that he hired his half-brother. The problem is they did a DNA test, and it proved that he was not a half-brother. They said that the deputy told them Montgomery himself had said that Malik Taylor, the deputy at the center of the allegation, was his relative, but then they see the new evidence from Montgomery's attorneys, and he's got like seven attorneys or something like that.
Oh, my gosh.
And lobbyists and people like that. So they list Malik Taylor with the same birth date as the deputy named in the lawsuit, and they say that genetic testing showed that with 99.9999998% certainty that his father was Mac Donald Taylor. The father listed on the sheriff's birth certificate is Whitfield Montgomery. So you have that. They dropped the nepotism charge, and that was one of six claims against him by Andrew Bailey for, you know, his quo warranto to kind of get him out of office.
Right.
I don't know that that really affects it that much. But then you have this, the other story today. He gets a couple of headlines. The city's embattled sheriff, Alfred Montgomery, was indicted Thursday on a misdemeanor and civil rights charge stemming from his handcuffing of a jail official. You might remember this from earlier this year. He ordered his deputies to handcuff the deputy jail commissioner. Her name is Tammy Ross, because he was trying to. Apparently, there was this allegation that there was sexual misconduct. In fact, there was. In the end, they found out that there was, and the person that was involved with that was dealt with appropriately. But what the sheriff tried to do, because Ross did not want to give him the access to the detainee, is cuffed her in his office, and now she's, you know,
grief.
Suing over that. So I guess he goes to the jail. He insists he wants to see the detainee. Ross refuses. He says that she's being held in contempt and orders a deputy to handcuff her and take her to his office. They point out in the story in the Post that his office, unlike other sheriffs across the state, does not run the jail or perform general law enforcement duties. You know, that's what's weird about this. The sheriff's office in St. Louis is to transport prisoners to and from court. They provide some courthouse security. They serve legal papers. So they're not the ones that are going to pull you over for, you know, well, nobody gets pulled over for expired tags, but you know what I mean. There's different responsibilities. So congrats to Sheriff Montgomery. He still has his job, and he's in the news twice today. One, for a federal indictment. It is a misdemeanor charge, so there's not a lot to that. He does have some bigger problems, I'd say.
Get more at 971talk.com.
No matter why your clients give, a donor-advised fund from DAF Giving 360 makes charitable giving simple and efficient. They can get a tax deduction upon funding an account, and their assets can potentially grow tax-free as they recommend when and where to give. DAF Giving 360 has over 25 years of expertise bringing donors, financial advisors, and charities together to make a greater impact. Learn more at dafgiving360.org/advisors.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
A message from a former New Yorker, presented by Street Easy.
We left Brooklyn Heights in 2021, and we miss it. We went from sharing a neighborhood with a few celebrities to sharing a neighborhood with my wife's parents.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Game day or any day, your fit says it all. Hit up MLBShop.com for the latest jerseys, caps, hoodies, and accessories to keep you in the game all year long. Rep your team, rep your city, rep yourself. Gear up and game on at MLBShop.com, the official online shop of Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.